Thank you to Wildcare and Wildlife Acoustics for sponsoring the Bat Chat podcast.
Can you hear that? We can. Wildlife Acoustics creates the world's leading bat acoustic monitoring tools, designed to help scientists make impactful discoveries for our biologically diverse planet, turning this into this. Visit wildlifeacoustics.com to learn more.
Wildcare are committed to supporting the ecology industry and are specialists in supplying a large range of monitoring, conservation and habitat management products, as well as equipment hire and service and repair. With a large range of products coupled with friendly and expert help and advice, Wildcare is a favourite supplier for ecologists nationwide. Go to wildcare.co.uk to see the full range and quote BatChat at the checkout for 10% off all bat detectors and bat boxes. Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of Bat Chat, the brand new podcast from the Bat Conservation Trust. Designed for its members and the wider bat conservation community, Bat Chat talks to the experts as well as local heroes to bring you the stories from the bat conservation movement. We'll be coming to you every second Wednesday from now all the way through the winter until the spring, and if you're listening to us via a podcast app, you can tap the subscribe button and that way we'll find our way automatically onto your phone without you having to do anything else. I'm Steve Rowe and this is Bat Chat.
And this had obviously really got people going because there were so many letters, so many requests.
Shirley Thompson, MBE, is a stalwart of bat conservation. She's been editing the Young Bat Worker magazine since its inception 32 years ago. In 2002, Shirley was awarded the Outstanding Voluntary Contribution to Bat Conservation Award, the precursor to the current Peak Guest Award, and I grabbed a few minutes with her at this year's National Bat Conference, which took place in September at the University of Nottingham. Shirley, how did it all start?
I wish I had some wonderful story to tell, but not really. In 1981, the Wildlife Countryside Act it came in, and a couple of years later, people realised that they needed lots of people to talk to householders and so on, explain that no longer were bats pests, but they were to be protected species. Rather than government money being put into it, as usual, we'll use volunteers. So at that point, apart from one or two small groups of sort of small bat groups, there weren't bat groups. But that was a time when quite deliberately bat groups were set up all over the country. And in Kent, there were two talks, one at either side of the country, about bats and asking people to, if they could take part in this and perhaps help out. I was really, my husband and I were both interested in wildlife. We knew nothing about bats. Looking back, I think it also coincided with the time that our second son went to university and there was a gap, something else might have fallen in, but it happened, I think, to be bats. So we went along to the first meeting. At the end of the talk about bats, we were asked if we'd like to leave our names, if we were interested in hearing about the first meeting of the Kent Bat Group. And I said to my husband, should we leave our names? And Noel said, well, as long as we don't commit ourselves, don't get involved. How many years ago did you say that was? And that's how it happened.
And you're the BCT's Honorary Education Officer and you edit the Young Bat Workers magazine. What made you want to set that up?
Well, was it 1987, the first National Bat Year? 86 or 87? The great thing right at the beginning of the bat movement was to make people aware of the changes or even just aware of bats, because at that time myths, sort of held everybody's ideas about bats. And so there was a National Bat Year, which was put out quite a lot of information. And right at the end of it, there was a film on television, Bats Need Friends, which Bob Stebbing was very involved with. And again, at the end, people were asked to send in for information. And this had obviously really got people going because there were so many, so many letters, so many requests. And we'd actually been started off in the back group by Tony Hudson, who was one of the people who went round starting up back groups. And he worked at that time at FFPS in London. And he said, oh, can you come up and help me sort out all these letters? And what struck us so much, that there were so many letters also from children, and there was nothing for children. There wasn't much for anybody, you know, not the great assortment of leaflets we can hand out now. Nothing for children. So I said, well, perhaps we could, you know, start something up. And that was it.
And in those, well, more than 30 years now, there's been over 100 magazines. How do you manage to keep finding new material for
With difficulty. I mean, I just hope that nobody else has kept them all like me, because if they look back, they might find some repetition. But you can present the same thing in new ways. And one of the things I do find difficult is that at first I used to get so many letters from children, because I did this actually from home to start with. And was only taken up by VCT as a junior section when VCT was formed a little while later. But I used to get letters from children and queers and help me with my project and sending pictures. It doesn't happen now. They don't write letters anymore.
Yeah.
All right, they might email, but it's unlikely. You've got to dig around on Facebook or something like that, which is a bit sad in a way. You've lost that direct connection.
Yeah.
So if something does come through to BCT or is on Facebook or something like that, they'll sometimes, if it looks interesting, if it's a school or a family, then I'll try and contact them and take it up from there. But it's totally changed that side of things.
And why are you so keen to educate the next generation about bats? Why has it been a lifelong project?
Well, I was a teacher. I mean, I think once a teacher, never a teacher, as some people tell me who don't wish to know that. That's the future, isn't it? There's no answer to that, really. It's just so obvious.
And what keeps you motivated?
Appreciation, I think, plus the fun of working with bats. But I couldn't do it, I don't think, if I didn't have appreciation back. So, I mean, you did it once, didn't you?
Yeah. I did. So when Shirley was, it was your 80th birthday party,
yes.
And I came up to you afterwards and said, you don't know who I am, but...
He was practically on his knees.
Because I joined BCT when I first got into bats, when I was 12 years old, and I joined Young Bat Workers Club, and it was through those magazines, and they were black and white back then.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's a lovely colour edition. And it was through Young Bat Worker magazine that sort of got me going, and then eventually upgraded to... become a full member,
well, and now you're a trustee.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing. But even, you know, next one down from that, working with Bat Conservation Trust, they're just so lovely, you know. I can't speak highly enough of them.
What changes have you seen in your time as a bat worker?
I think the whole attitude to bats has changed. It was a real struggle at first to get people to even think about bats as anything useful out there. But now I think people do know an awful lot more. And, you know, television and various programs and so on really has made people more aware. And I think also just very recently there's much more this movement to awareness of the environment and just how much harm we're doing and how much effort we've got to put into improving things. So that's a real plus.
Mm. What do you wish you'd known when you were starting out?
Oh dear. If I'd known, I'd probably mind to start. There have been moments.
I mean, being from the Midlands, I don't know much about Kent Bat Group at all. What sort of work is Kent Bat Group up to at the moment? What sort of projects and activities have you got going on?
Well, the usual standard bat group things, but the thing that really we're geographically in an ideal spot for, and to me is one of the most exciting things, is the Nathusius pipistrelle project. The Nathusius, as you know, is a migratory bat. We didn't know quite to what extent or where it went. And so at the beginning of the project, I think, was it just 3 or 4 counties just were asked to go, were given training and asked to trap in 3 or 4 sites several times during the year, water sites near the water bodies. And We're still doing that, and I just find it so exciting. The most exciting moment was, gosh, was it 2014? I think, I may be wrong, when we were trapping just inland, just along one of the creeks, as the person who had just collected some bats from the harp trap. She looked in the bag, because, you know, you grab them and put them in, you don't look very hard to start. And she realised it was an enthusiast, and she said, "Oh, it's got a ring on." And I can see her face now. She went redder and redder as she looked at the ring. She said, "This bat was ringed in Lithuania." And I'll never forget that moment. That was wonderful. It's enough. God, how far is it? Oh, it's well over 1,000 miles. Yeah. And that was the first of the bats from way up that was caught. And then we actually caught another on another site in Kent that year, also from Lithuania. And it was rather nice that I actually the next year went to the Berlin Bat Conference and actually talked to some of the people who'd been ringing up at that end. And of course now this year, the really exciting one is that one has been, that was ringed in Northumberland, has been found in Poland. So that's slightly different direction, that.
So the projects are really starting to have some sort of results now, aren't they?
Oh, yes. And it's staggering, really. I mean, it's not surprising we catch theirs because they up in Lithuania and Latvia, they ring thousands because it's in conjunction with bird ringing as well. But when you think it's only not that many comparatively that we ring, so the chance of one being picked up going in the other direction is pretty low.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know how many they've sent out from Northumberland, but not a huge number because they were one of the later groups to join in. But here one's up, turned up in Poland. That's just amazing.
Obviously, you said bat groups doing the other sort of standard stuff, but you also occasionally get asked to go and do TV stuff because you're on an episode with Julian Clary a year or two ago, weren't you? God. What was that like to film with him?
Oh, he's really nice. I'm definitely a fan of his now. I mean, he's absolutely delightful. Totally open about everything, you know. And very appropriately, the wonderful house he lives in, it's like an old manor house almost. It used to be owned by Noel Coward. Very appropriate. But he did it up. But he was just lovely and just is so interested in wildlife and tickled pink, you know, that he had long-eared bats in the loft and we watched pipistrelles come out from outside the house. And that, yeah. No, but he was great.
And what do you think will be the challenges for bat work in the future?
I think that volunteers are wonderful. The management of volunteers, everybody says, is difficult. I think one problem I'm finding is actual commitment. You start doing something, you've got to go on doing it. Not necessarily quite as long as I have. But for instance, if you're trained up and you're going to take on bat care or trapping and so on, having gone through that training and working with people, you need to keep it up to make it worthwhile and pass that on to other people. You know, it isn't just fun for 2 or 3 trips. Do you feel that?
It's an investment for somebody, yes, to train somebody up. So I guess if people are taking the time to train people up, it becomes frustrating when they suddenly stop coming and you've passed that skill on and then you don't help reap the benefits of
that,
I guess.
That's right, yes. So yes, and it's such a busy, busy world. There's so much. Everybody has so much. It's too busy that perhaps one can't be quite so committed to things. Yeah, I think people need to really be sure of what they're doing and why they want to do it and see how important it is to stick at it and to help other people and bring them in too.
And what can we do to attract the next generation? What can we help to keep bat work going forward into the future?
Carry on with young bat work. It's quite difficult, isn't it? Because I'd love to get into schools and get schools involved more, but again, they are so bound by lack of time and curriculum and set so much that really you need the teacher to be really keen to want to give that time. It's the teachers I'd like to get hold of. But I'm not quite sure the best way to do it. But we keep trying, and I still think that the greatest thing you can do is show your enthusiasm. So, you know, I think bat walks are one of the best ways of getting through to the public. You see a face light up the first time they actually hear a bat on a bat detector. I don't think there's anything like it. I think that's one of the things that really caught me on the first time we went out, our first bat group meeting. We went down to the lake. Somebody got this funny little thing called a bat detector. You know, no, hardly anybody had them in those days. I am very old. And we went out and we heard them. Absolute magic. And it's that magic is still there to me.
Yeah.
It's still there. But so if we can get the kids also out there somehow and listening and hearing and getting involved, I mean, these various initiatives that there are now, getting people out to camps and forest schools and things like that, I think is great. Yeah. Because they've got to get to connect with nature and do it soon too.
And finally, if you had to describe the bat conservation movement.
Oh dear. No, sorry, not that. You didn't tell me it was going to be difficult like this. Well, for me, life-changing. Mm-hmm. It's completely changed my whole direction. In fact, I quite often start, you know, at a walk or a talk, I would say to people, I must issue a warning because you can get hooked. And I think, you know, that is what makes it go forward. There are so many people out there who have got hooked, and it really has become part of their life.
Shirley Thompson, it's been a delight. Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you want to find out more about the Young Bat Workers Club, head to bats.org.uk and click Join Us. Next time, we'll be talking about grey long-eared bats and the big bat year. Until then, don't forget to subscribe. What did you think of this episode? If you can please leave a quick comment about the show in the ratings and review section, we'd really appreciate it. It helps other listeners to discover our podcast.